history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there that need to be told. And if we'll take the time to ask a few questions and listen, you never know what we might find out about those men and women who have put their lives on the line for us. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as I said, when we take that journey, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're always entertained, and so often inspired by these tales from our greatest generation. Today I'm in Merced, California, visiting with 92-year-old Ralph Thiessen, originally from Chowchilla, California, right down the road from here. And how many kids were there in your family, Ralph?
10.
10 kids. That's a big family. And what number were you?
4.
So early enough to get a lot of chores and maybe have some little siblings to pick on a little bit?
That's true.
But you weren't born here in California.
No.
You're born in Wisconsin. Where in Wisconsin?
About in the middle of the state.
Uh-huh. And so you were just a kid when you moved here to California, and I'm sure that was quite a difference. But what do you remember about those early years in Wisconsin? What was life like up there?
A lot of snow, for one thing. I was only 6 years old when we left there, so there's not too many things I remember about it.
Was that exciting to move, or was that kind of scary?
Well, we lived in a town there in Marshville and moved out to the country here in Chowchilla.
Mm-hmm.
So, big difference.
And your father was a World War I veteran.
Right.
I've seen a couple pictures of him in uniform in World War I. Did he ever tell you kids about anything that he did in the war?
Not really. He's pretty quiet. The only story he ever told me was that he had a German machine gun shooting at him. So there was a barn close by, so he said he drove into the window and was able to escape.
Good thing he did, or else you wouldn't have been born.
That's right.
And you've got 5 kids and 9 grandkids who can tell a similar story because of your experience in the Navy in World War II. But before we get to World War II, I want to hear about these years here in the San Joaquin Valley, because you moved here just in time for the Great Depression. What was that time like here? What did you see of that era?
Well, we ate a lot of field corn.
The stuff that's supposed to be for the cows?
Right. We did a lot of corn cooking. I liked sports that we had in Chowchilla. I played football, baseball, and basketball. And so I liked my high school here in Chowchilla.
And I bet if you got 10 kids in the family, those kids probably have a lot of chores to do.
Yeah, we milked the cows by hand, the no machines, and we had a big chicken ranch and had a hatchery there. My dad raised turkeys, just about completed our farming.
So did you have to chase the turkeys, or were you collecting eggs or shoveling chicken excrement or what?
No, he didn't keep them that long to start laying eggs. He usually got rid of them around Thanksgiving, but he enjoyed it. He didn't have to take orders from anybody, but he was on his own, and he really liked that. So I was pretty proud of him.
Sounds like he taught you 10 kids some important lessons or principles.
All right.
Is there something that you think stands out that was the most important thing you gleaned from that?
I just know I never got any beatings from him, so I got a lot of that.
You must have been following the rules.
Yeah.
Or not getting caught, one of the two.
Right.
And as far as your hometown, Chowchilla, what was it like then? What were the big things to do?
Well, the people in the family didn't get to spend much money in the town, and but the only thing they had a theater, and we'd go to the show once in a while, but that was about it.
You're 92 now, so if I do the math, that tells me you were in high school when Pearl Harbor happened, December 7th, 1941.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that Sunday? How did you find out what happened?
Well, we were playing basketball, practicing.
So someone came in the gym and told you what happened, or what?
No, I heard it at home, and I had to take my brother. He was hitchhiking to Fresno, going to school at Fresno State.
Was that shocking news? Did you understand what had happened or what it was going to mean?
Yeah, I hadn't realized what was happening. Although I didn't hear about Hawaii too much until then.
Yeah, it wasn't even a state yet.
No.
How did you see life changing after that?
Well, I decided I wanted to go into the Navy, and a good friend of mine in high school was Tom Begley. Tom and I went in the service. Tom went to the Marines, and I went to the Navy, and I boarded the Saratoga in Bremerton, Washington. And one day in the dining line, Tom was way in the back, and I turned around, and I said, well, it sure looks like Tom Begley. So I went back, and it was. And I didn't expect him. I thought he just came aboard because some come on and just help, or got fired. They got a fire signature that you take when somebody's welding or something like that. And so I had Tom come to dinner with me on Sarah, and we started talking about old times. And I'd go up there and visit him, and the Marines are really, really nice. I enjoyed being around them. But Tom, one time, I tried to get him to go down to the fire room where I was stationed. And so he came down there with me, and he didn't stay down very long. I don't know if he thought the sailors wouldn't like him or why his idea was. So he got out of there. So
maybe it's a little hot for him down there.
Well, I didn't take him all the way down, though.
I don't want you to lose your spot in the story, but there are a couple of things that come to mind here, and so everybody understands. So you and Tom in high school were pretty close,
mm-hmm.
but you're in the Navy. He's in the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to a lot of guys. I mean, I've talked to a lot of guys who went to sign up together with the hopes that, hey, if I sign up with my buddies, we're all going to go to the same place. We'll get mm-hmm. to be in the war together. And it never worked out that way for him. And here you go in the Navy, he goes in the Marines, and you end up on the same ship?
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible?
I don't know. His sister was glad that we were together.
Yeah, what do you need to tell me about his sister?
Well, she was a school teacher, very lovable person. I dated her for quite a few years.
Uh-huh.
Our religious, she was a Baptist, I was Catholic, so it didn't work out.
But she thought highly of you. So when you're heading off to sea, she was writing you letters and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And then her brother, your buddy Tom, ends mm-hmm. up on the same ship as you, just one of a handful of Marines on this giant carrier with a ton of sailors.
Mm-hmm.
That had to be a kind of a mind-blowing moment when you see him in that line.
I did. I was in line when I seen him back there.
Yeah?
I motioned him to come have lunch with us. He did. But I thought maybe he was just coming in for a work detail because we did have Marines come in for that.
Mm.
So it's nice. I'm going to be stationed aboard the Sarah.
And let's talk about the Sarah. So the Saratoga was a very historic aircraft carrier. I mean, and some people don't realize that in the breadth of World War II, from 41 to 45, the carriers at the start of the war were a far cry from the carriers they were bringing in mm-hmm. at the end of the war.
Well, the Saratoga was carrier number 3. We did a lot of, over in Hawaii, we trained a lot of pilots there because it was a big carrier. And I had seen a couple of guys go on a drink, but they got out all right. The ships that they wouldn't anchor us together because we get in a fight once in a while with the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time when we docked and they had us all go stand in line to get our maneuver out in this town. And we got together and had to kind of protect each other. Because we're pretty sure there'd be some fights otherwise.
So the guys from the Big E didn't like the guys from the Sarah?
My first of two.
Uh-huh. Well, good thing you both decided you were fighting the Japanese and not each other.
Right.
Both of those ships had quite a history.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about your duties on the Saratoga. You're just a teenager from Chowchilla on a big ship that probably had more people on the ship than in Chowchilla, right?
Yeah, I think so. When we had air, you guys are handling the airplanes. We increased the men on the ship, and we had the hangar deck. We had planes down in there, and then we had planes on the topside. But I was a water king, which is something that not too many guys in the Navy know about.
Mm-hmm.
I kept track of the ship's water, and when I left the boiler room, that's where I went. I left the soundings back of the boiler. If the smoke was coming out of the smokestack, I'd be up on top and watching it. I'd have to tell the boilers down below that they're smoking to clear it up.
And how would you do that? You do that over at intercom?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So how much of your time did you spend down below deck?
4 hours on and 4 hours off.
Uh-huh. If general quarters ever sounded, what would you have to do?
I was to go down to this machine area, and we had our pumps down there to put out the fires wherever they are, and I run that pump. probably on that one time when we got hit by the Japanese kamikazes.
And not just by one or two, but by no fewer than five kamikaze planes. That was on February 21st, 1945, off of Iwo Jima. But it would not be enough to sink the legendary ship. The USS Saratoga had quite a history. She was originally laid down as a battle cruiser in 1920, converted to an aircraft carrier in 1922. In 1938, the Saratoga, how about this, actually carried out a mock attack on Pearl Harbor that in retrospect featured some eerie parallels to how the Japanese caught America sleeping 3 years later in that same spot. On December 7, 1941, the Saratoga was pulling into San Diego, but a little more than a month later, she took her first hit, struck by a Japanese torpedo near Hawaii. The carrier would have been involved in the Battle of Midway, but a delay in loading aircraft aboard put her behind schedule. The Saratoga would participate in the Guadalcanal campaign in August of 1942. A month later, she was struck by another enemy torpedo, leaving her dead in the water, but this was one resilient carrier. After more repairs, the Saratoga continued her impressive war record, helping to decimate Rabaul and then supporting the invasion of Tarawa in November of 1943. Continuing in the Pacific and even for a while in the Indian Ocean, the Saratoga in mid-1944 was converted to a training carrier, practicing with night fighter outfits at Pearl Harbor on into January 1945, when with those two teenagers from Chowchilla, California aboard, Tom Bagley and Ralph Thiessen, she sailed for Iwo Jima, where her planes would attempt to soften up Japanese defenses as Marines came ashore. It was there, off of Iwo Jima, that the Saratoga faced her darkest day, a day only one of those best friends would live to tell about. And that's exactly what he's going to do when we come back. Go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos and even a short video related to today's episode, and we'll come right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. Nearly 1,000 veterans have gotten to see their memorials for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. Have you ever looked at a box of old videotapes or photos and said, one of these days I'm going to do something with those? I know the feeling. But more importantly, I found the solution at VHSmaster.com. VHS Master will take all your old VHS and 8mm tapes and reels and convert them to DVDs and digital videos, ensuring that your priceless memories will last for years to come. They'll even preserve and restore photos, slides, and audio cassettes. Go to VHSmaster.com. That's VHSmaster.com. And tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.
This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, 92-year-old Ralph Thiessen of Merced, California. Born in Wisconsin, he grew up in Chowchilla, California, the fourth of 10 children. If you happened to grow up in Chowchilla, he might just have been your little league coach. He did that for 14 years. But before all of that, Ralph had to survive World War II aboard the USS Saratoga, an aircraft carrier that the Japanese claimed seven times to have sunk during World War II. Each and every time that came out, it was what we would call in today's world, fake news. And, you know, sometimes we meet veterans here who they're really talkative. They volunteer every memory and emotion really freely. Other times we encounter men more like Ralph, who will tell you he's always been a little bit on the shy side. But there are some stories in his memory bank, some life experiences most of us will never face. And one of the elements that makes his story so powerful is the bond he shared with a high school friend. By the way, that was not the only small world connection he made in the Navy. One time, while his ship, that Saratoga, was docked at Pearl Harbor, Ralph heard his name over the loudspeaker. He'd been summoned by a friend from his hometown who just so happened to have access to a landing barge, not to mention a Jeep on Oahu. They had a memorable liberty together 2,500 miles from their small town homes in the middle of the Golden State. That was one friend from back home, but you heard Ralph talk quite a bit about Tom Bagley, that friend from Chowchilla High School whom he encountered in the chow line on the Saratoga. What are the odds that two high school buddies could join different branches of the service, the Navy and the Marines, but end up on the same ship?
A casual observer might say, hey, if you're going to be in the Marine Corps in World War II, you're probably a lot safer being on an aircraft carrier than storming the beaches at Tarawa or Iwo Jima or Okinawa or something like
right.
that. But that's not how it worked out for him.
No, it didn't.
And he had some kind of premonition of this?
He did. We went to an island called Ulithi, and there was a large number of ships out there. I mean, they had probably a couple thousand.
Right.
And so we took off from there. We went to Japan and hit Japan for a couple of days. And then we went to Iwo Jima. Part of the convoy went to Okinawa, but they sent us to Iwo Jima.
And this is while they're still fighting for the island?
Mm-hmm. They put over the ship's radio that we could see Iwo Jima.
You guys saw the flag flying on top of it?
Didn't see that. We was there in the first few days.
As this is going on, Tom is expressing to you that he doesn't think he's ever going to make it back home?
And that's what he did. We were on the gun mount, and he was talking, and he said, I'm not coming home. I said, what? And I'm surprised him telling me that. I told him, I just said, Tom, you're going home. I said, no. So he said, tell my parents I love them. And my sisters, he had two sisters. I love them also. That was it.
And had you guys encountered kamikaze attacks before?
No, that was the first one.
So tell me about that day. How did that unfold for you?
Well, we went in lockdown, and the next morning I got up and I said, I got to go to the Marine Corps. I heard some of the Marines had gotten killed. So I went up to his apartment, and the Marine up there told me he knew I was a friend of Tom's. He said, Tom didn't make it. And I couldn't believe it.
If there's more you want to say about that, I don't want to stop you. But tell me about the attack itself. How many kamikazes attacked the Saratoga, and where were you while that was going on?
I was down in the room running the pumps if I had to.
So general quarters sounded, you knew you were under attack?
Right.
So you're down there waiting for orders of...
Yeah, one of them run the pumps when he put the fires out and start putting bodies on the flight deck where there's space to bury them at sea.
Did you feel the impact of any of those planes or bombs?
No, not really. I could hear our guns shooting, and there was a mountain right above where our air intake. I could have went up there and seen the battle, but I decided I didn't want to do that. That was before Tom died.
I'm just reading what you and your wife put together here. It talks about how on February 16th, the Saratoga and the Enterprise joined forces with escorts and bombed the area of bases around Tokyo with their planes. And this largest carrier task force ever assembled gathered off the coast of Japan, consisting of 15 large carriers with destroyers, cruisers, and battleships. The Saratoga and other ships made aerial strikes on Tokyo, Japan on the 17th, 18th, and 19th of February. They bombed Japan around the clock, making daylight strikes, while the Saratoga and three other carriers, equipped with radar for night flying, made daring night strikes against Tokyo. Harassing the Japanese day and night kept their forces from giving any assistance to the army, which was dug in at Iwo Jima. And then on the 19th, the Saratoga rendezvoused with the fueling group at dawn. One half of the invasion group went to Okinawa, as you said, while the Saratoga continued on to Iwo Jima. Later, you received more replacement aircraft and launched night patrols around Iwo Jima and Chichi Jima. On February 20th, more planes were sent out on patrol, but there was no report of the enemy. On February 21st, with only three destroyers to help screen the carrier, the Saratoga proceeded eastward toward her area for night patrol. That afternoon, Captain Mobus announced Iwo Jima and Mount Suribachi, was visible within 25 miles, so those who wanted to see the island should go topside. And this is when you say you and Tom were sitting on the gun mount, talking of home. You told me the promise he asked you to keep. So it's only 4 hours after that, 5 o'clock, that general quarters sounds, man your battle stations, and everyone was scrambling. The Japanese attack began with fighter planes and kamikaze planes coming through the low cloud cover, and the insufficient escorts made the Saratoga a vulnerable target. After 3 hours and 17 minutes of fighting, 25 to 30 incoming planes, 7 bombs, and 5 kamikazes hit the ship. And this says, the old lady quivered from stem to stern as the flight deck and hull absorbed the beating. 7 bombs and 5 kamikazes. I mean, I've talked to guys where 1 kamikaze hit them, and it hit them in the right spot, and that was enough.
All right.
So you're in the fire room on the port side of the ship?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the fire room on the starboard side of the ship?
It was the fire room 7. There's a few of them killed there. In fact, they put these 3 bodies on the hangar deck and covered them up. And I did look at them. Somebody pulled the sheets back. And one was the chief, and I don't know what the other guys were.
But if you had been in that fire room...
I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. So basically the identical station on the other side of the ship is taken out. And this damage from all those bombs and the kamikazes, it's tearing up different parts of the ship. During the same battle, the USS Bismarck Sea was hit and sunk. Did you see any of that?
I seen it on fire, yeah. And the distance was on fire.
Yeah, and so the Bismarck Sea is sunk, and a lot of their crew was in the water. Some of them were killed by Japanese planes strafing the water. And all this is going on, and your ship is hit, as we said, by 7 bombs and 5 kamikazes. That's a lot of damage. Did you go topside and see that damage, see what had happened to your ship?
Not at the time, no. I seen pictures, but I didn't go up there. In fact, after the battle, I was washing blood off the air intake.
How'd the blood get there?
Some guys came down that way that were injured. Those are the guys I helped get out.
But if someone knocks on that hatch, you're not supposed to open it.
Right. It's clogged down. They came down from the air intake.
Uh-huh.
And that's how the blood got on it. I see they were bleeding. One guy was bleeding. So I took him to a place where they could go in the hallway and would go to where their first aid was.
Mm-hmm.
You guys said, you know, you weren't supposed to do that. Yeah.
Those guys' lives depended on it. You were going to do it, huh?
Yeah.
How scary was that to hear all this going on above you, then to see some of the wounded coming down? I mean, were you worried that your ship was going to go down? Were you worried that you were going to get killed?
I wasn't too worried. I don't know why. I just didn't think about it.
Mm-hmm. So that battle starts at 5 o'clock at night. It's over before 8:30. So it's nighttime. You said you're cleaning the blood off the air intake. How'd you sleep that night?
Well, a long time ago. I thought a lot about Tom and wondered whether he made it. And like I said, the next morning I went to Marine's quarters and they told me.
I know, like you said, that was a long time ago. And you're an 18-year-old kid. But can you help us understand what that felt like? What that moment was like when they tell you Tom died? Tom was killed?
You're shook up. A number of things enter your mind. And I thought about Tom. I said, the first thing I got to do is see him and find out he's not there.
And you mentioned a burial at sea.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just Tom. It was 123 guys from your ship that you guys had to bury at sea.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring you all topside for that ceremony?
I was appointed to clean the liver intake, so I didn't get to go.
So you weren't up there to watch it?
I didn't go up there. I was busy washing blood off the walls.
Probably would have been hard to be up there for that.
It would have been.
You've got a couple pictures of him right here.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see these pictures of Tom,
mm-hmm.
what comes to mind? What kind of guy was he?
You couldn't beat him. He's one of the best guys I ever met.
Have you ever wondered over the years? I mean, it's been 73 years since this happened. Have you ever found yourself thinking, here's what Tom would have done with his life? Here's mm-hmm. the kind of person he would have been?
Yeah, he'd been a good farmer. He was smart, very smart.
And there were 123 men killed that day in that attack, almost 200 more wounded. Were there other friends of yours or people that you knew that were killed?
Not on the Saratoga. I I more or less kept to my apartment by the time I got out. I'd go to get my food for the day.
So what about after that? They probably had to repair your ship a little bit.
Yeah, we did a little repair shop, a little repair on the ship when it was in Pearl Harbor before we went to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
They did find that one pilot went through there onto the hangar deck and caught all the plane on the flying deck on fire that we had on there.
Mm-hmm. When you look at those pictures, I mean, there are some pictures of the Saratoga during this attack, flames going everywhere and destroyed planes, body parts, guns that are torn up, the flight deck itself with big ruts and rips in it. You ever look at those pictures and say, how did I survive that?
Not really. I knew I was coming home, but, and so I wasn't too scared about it. The only thing like I say is my buddy getting killed.
How'd you know you were coming home?
I didn't think anything about it. I knew I was coming home. At least I thought I would.
Where do you think that came from?
Oh, maybe my dad.
Because he came home from World War I, or he just raised you to think that way?
I would think that gave me some confidence in some things.
Mm-hmm. So, after that, did you have a feeling that the war was going to be over soon, or were you kind of concerned about heading to invade Japan?
The only time I thought the war was going to be over was when I was in Seattle, and the newspapers came out about an atomic bomb. And I thought, they ain't going to last long now.
So we mentioned, there were 5 different kamikazes that hit your ship in that attack. You guys had some repairs at Eniwetok, then you go back to Bremerton, and they're going to do the rest of the repairs.
Well, we had some sailors that were really injured very bad, so we just took them off. 4 or 5 that they took off the ship there, like, get medical attention. There might have been more than that. But
when you guys made it all the way back to the States, and you're in Bremerton, Washington, they discover that the body of one of the kamikaze pilots is still in there?
It was, yeah. It was on the other side, but it was in the middle, more in the middle of the ship. Hangar deck just exploded in there, and then the planes just started burning up.
So they're cleaning all that up, and they find one of the guys who damaged your ship still in that cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you're in Washington, and you saw the newspaper headline? Atomic bomb was dropped?
Yeah.
You probably didn't know what an atomic bomb was, right?
It was about to kill a lot of people, so that'd be big.
And what about when they said, a week later, the war's over, Japan has surrendered, this thing's all done? What did that mean to you? What did that feel like?
Well, I was glad, but I didn't get too emotional about it. But I was glad it was over.
It was over, but Ralph still had a job to do, a very important promise to keep. We'll hear how he carried out that pledge he had made the night before his friend Tom Begley was killed on the Saratoga. By the way, if you ever find yourself on the island of Oahu and you visit what locals there refer to simply as the Punch Bowl, that's the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific in the Punch Bowl Crater, you can find Tom Begley's name there etched in stone. Since Tom was buried at sea, his name is listed with so many others in the Courts of the Missing, a haunting memorial to those whose remains have never been recovered. Ralph Thiessen and his wife Noreen have been there. They wouldn't stop looking until they found Tom's name. You also heard Ralph talk about the atomic bomb, but I bet you didn't know it took 2 atomic detonations to sink that oh-so-resilient USS Saratoga, or that you can actually go dive amongst the wreckage of that historic carrier. We'll explore those topics and more when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all a reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they're going to your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.
Veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 92-year-old Ralph Thiessen of Merced, California. He grew up with three sisters and six brothers, and six of the seven boys in the Thiessen family served in our armed forces. You heard Ralph explain what he was doing on the USS Saratoga when that historic aircraft carrier survived the impact of seven bombs and five kamikaze hits on February 21st, 1945. Ralph, of course, survived, but his best friend on the ship, an old Chowchilla High School classmate named Tom Begley, did not. If you ever have the chance to read Marion Walter's book, Sarah CV3, Sinking the Rising Sun, you'll find the book deals extensively with Tom Begley's story. I have that book linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com and on the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. Page number 220 of the book tells the story of a conversation Ralph and Tom and another friend had the night before that devastating attack. Despite their attempts to convince him otherwise, Tom insisted he knew he wouldn't survive the war, and he asked Ralph to deliver a message to his family back home. "Tell them it was great while it lasted, and I was happy," he said. You heard Ralph explain how devastating it was to visit the Marine gunner's quarters the next day after the attack and learn that Tom had been killed while manning his anti-aircraft gun. But let's get to the conclusion of that story.
What about carrying out that promise that you made to Tom?
I did go see his folks.
When was that?
Right when I got home. I was a little late in getting off the ship because they took the starboard side off first and then they took the port side off.
Mm-hmm.
So it was about a couple of weeks before I got home.
That must have been a really hard thing to do.
I did write her a letter.
You wrote his sister a letter?
Yeah. And I told her it was going to be the hardest letter I ever wrote. And it was.
What did you say in the letter?
I told her how sad I was to have her brother killed, and about one page letter that I wrote on. And I think she still has the letter.
But then you get back to Chowchilla, and your war is over. You don't have to fight anymore, but you have to go see his parents.
Yeah, I did. Loveta and Tom's girlfriend came to our place, and I think a little while before I went and seen him, I told her more about Tom. I think about it, but like I say every day I'm reminded over there with that Kodak.
Yeah, so you've got, right next to your favorite chair, you've got one of those digital picture frames. So it'll rotate through as many pictures as you can stick on there.
Mm-hmm.
And how often does Tom's face come up on there?
It comes up every day.
Every day?
Yeah. In the morning, hi, Tom.
And how did his parents receive it when you went and saw him? How did they handle that?
Oh, they're sad. Very sad. I think being buried at sea had...
And he wasn't the only young man from Chowchilla who died in World War II.
All right.
How many people do you think were in Chowchilla during those years? What was the population?
2,500, maybe.
2,500. And how many kids from Chowchilla gave their lives in the war?
I think 25.
25.
Yeah, they got in the park in Chowchilla. They got a memorial.
Mm-hmm.
That is set up with all their names on it.
You ever go over there?
Yeah, I've gone there a couple of times.
Tom's name probably isn't the only one you remember.
Right.
One out of 100 people in the whole town.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heavy price to pay.
Yeah.
Also among those 25 Chowchilla boys to make the ultimate sacrifice in World War II was a Marine named Burl Wetter. He had been a standout fullback on some head-turning Fresno State Bulldog football teams before the war. Wetter was killed while fighting the Japanese on Okinawa. I mentioned that book that tells more of Tom Begley's story, but also linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com is a video from the Stories of Service Project, produced and narrated by Tom's sister, LaVeda Begley Peterson. It only takes a few minutes to watch, and I think it'll help you even better understand the sacrifice that family made, a sacrifice hundreds of thousands of American families made in World War II, including 25 of them in Ralph Thiessen's small hometown.
And anything else about the Saratoga that we didn't talk about? I know you guys did quite a bit of that magic carpet duty, bringing people home from
right.
the Pacific.
Right. The hanging deck was full of beds. They rolled them, I think, 3 or 4 high, mm-hmm. and way up there,
mm-hmm.
in order to get all the boys they could to come home.
Yeah, you probably had about 4 or 5 Chowchillas on that ship then.
I could have had. Yeah. I remember one guy was from Chowchilla. I didn't see him aboard the ship, but he told me after I happened to run into him that he was on a ship coming back from Hawaii.
Was it hard to get back on with your life after all that, after what you'd seen and what you'd gone through?
I found a job right away, which I didn't like. I worked at the creamery in Chowchilla, and I didn't care too much for it, strapping wire around the boxes. And so I had a neighbor that I really liked, and I worked for him some before I went into service. And the second day I was home, he came down to see me. I found out I was home, but he came down and wanted me to go to work for him. So I did. I finally rented the place for him, and that's how I got my start farming.
Mm-hmm. And you farmed cotton, alfalfa,
cotton,
what else?
Mainly alfalfa.
Uh-huh.
It was a pig farm when I first went down there. We turned it into a dairy.
Uh-huh. I guess I can't let you tell your story without telling a little bit of your family's story. You mentioned that your father had served in that you're the 4th out of 10 kids. 7 of those 10 are boys. And how many of those 7 boys ended up in the armed forces?
There's 6 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's 2 of us were in the Navy, and one there in the Air Force, and the one was in Korea. One of my brothers, MP, and over in France.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they put him over there, but he was stationed out here at Castleville for a while.
I bet that gives you a lot of pride to be one of 6 brothers who all served our country.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say you're most proud of?
Probably being a father of 5 kids. We have a nice family.
Mm-hmm.
They're all college educated.
And how long have you and Noreen been married?
65 years.
How'd you meet?
I was at a dance in Chowchilla, and I asked her to dance with me.
You think she'll tell me the same story?
Yeah, I think she would.
What have you appreciated about her for 65 years?
Well, she's a good housewife, good farmer's wife, drove tractor. But the only thing I didn't let her do is bale hay.
You didn't want her to throw her back out baling hay?
Right.
Well, why don't we hear a little bit from the beautiful bride you'll see if you pull up the Thiessen's wedding photo at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Especially since she's the reason this interview is happening. Interestingly enough, here's a little aside for you. I've actually had Ralph Thiessen on my list of veterans who've been suggested to me. He's been on that list for over a decade. When I first began interviewing World War II vets on television back in 2005, his nephew sent me his information. I followed up with it, but Ralph declined. He wasn't ready to talk about these issues. What changed? Well, he has a loving and persistent wife who eventually convinced him to work with her to write some of his experiences down. So when another listener named Larry Bennett recently recommended Ralph again, this time he was ready to talk, and we have Noreen to thank for that. And Noreen, you've been listening. Anything you feel you need to add to what your husband shared here?
I know he enjoyed his service years, even though things didn't turn up, especially with losing his best friend. But he always said he enjoyed the Navy, and it taught him a lot. And I'm glad he came back in one piece.
Is there part of his story, as you've listened to it over the years or helped piece it together over the years, that takes you back a little bit, that gets your attention or raises your eyebrows and say, boy, how did he deal with that?
I often wondered how any of them dealt with it. And so many of them, to all the different wars and everything, how they deal with it. And some of them aren't able to. And that's the sad part about it.
And I know it's a little hard for him to talk about Tom. You can tell that they were very close, and that promise he made, while it was difficult, not easy to keep, it was crucial for him to keep that promise. What can you add to maybe what he shared about that you've witnessed, as far as how much that friendship has meant to him in all the years since the war?
He mentions Tom quite a bit. Different times, different things would come up. He says, I remember when the Navy and Marines never got along, so to speak, and they never traveled together, and they always traveled with their own branch. So many times when they were able to get leave together, that was very important for them, that they could always go back to their days in school and have things to talk about and home and things like that. So he remembers all those good times and everything. I know he feels he's very fortunate that he did get to serve with Tom. He always said Tom would have made a very good farmer and a good dad, because he was a good brother to his sisters, and his mom and dad were very good people. So it was hard on the family. It's like all families, that their sons never came home. I just wish this didn't have to happen all the time. Seems like it's never going to end. Hopefully someday.
You were talking about him saying Tom would have been a good dad and a good farmer.
Mm-hmm. He's mentioned that a number of times.
Sounds like Ralph was a pretty good dad and a pretty good farmer.
Yes, he was. Yeah, he was a good farmer. He started out with secondhand tractors, secondhand just about everything, and build them up little by little. And he was very successful, and he loved farming. He always thought it was the best way to make a living, and he was able to. Had 5 kids and 9 grandchildren. They all adore him like I do.
You said they adore him like I do. You still adore him after 65 years? You're not sick of him yet?
No, I don't know what I'd do without him. Oh, we have ups and downs. I think there's not a married couple that hasn't had ups and downs. But we work through them. We love our church. It's been a good life. And I'd like to add, if veterans are listening, please think about your story, what you did. It doesn't make any difference where you were stationed, what you did. You left a family at home. Keep on thinking about telling the story, because so many dads that I've talked to, why didn't I get my dad to talk more? Why didn't I ask my dad more questions? And our kids were after me for 5 or 6 years. Mom, you got to get to talk to dad before he, doesn't remember anymore. And I said, well, he's got his books and stuff, and his mom's not the same thing. So it took me about 3 years to read different books and put it together. I'm not the greatest writer, but the kids all seem like they enjoyed having their books together. And his Tisa military family. It's not too often that there are 6 out of 7 sons go off to war, are able to come back and have a good family life. I think it's so important to have them talk about it. And I realize some of them that can't and maybe never will be able to. But if you can, it means so much to your family to have something. And years goes by, the kids can say, I remember when Dad told me this, and I remember when Dad said that. It just sort of keeps the family going, I think.
It reminds us of the price that was paid for our freedom and our connection to it.
Very much so.
Well, good job getting him to open up a little bit.
Yeah, it took a while.
Persistence pays off, huh?
I guess.
Well, it's good to hear that from someone else. I think it means more coming from you, because people are probably sick of me saying it. That is, after all, the primary purpose of this show, making sure that veterans' families have a lasting record of what their loved ones did when freedom was at stake and the world as we know it was saved by their service and sacrifice. course, we always hope that on top of any veteran we interview here, maybe you'll be inspired to talk to the veterans in your life and get those experiences down so they're not lost forever. Let's get back to Ralph now, because there are a few more of my sometimes silly questions that I haven't gotten to ask you yet.
Have you ever looked back on that time in your life, your time in the Navy, especially when the Saratoga got hit by 5 kamikazes at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought about that and said, if I was on the opposite side of the ship, if I was where Tom was, if I was here, if I was there, that I never would have met my wife?
Mm-hmm.
Our 5 kids would have never been born with our 9 grandkids?
Yeah.
How do you figure that one out? How do you explain that?
Because I was lucky.
Yeah?
I was pretty religious.
You think God was looking out for you?
Could have been, yeah.
Anything else I didn't ask you about that you think people should know?
I'll tell you about it. When I came home, they had a party in Choctaw for the servicemen. And they had all the names on this big paper on the gym. And I looked, didn't see my name on there. And it really tore me up. Then I go over to the Catholic Church, not the same time, but later on. My name wasn't on there. So I put my name on there in the color crayon. I did the biggest.
Here I went out there and risked my life and almost got killed, and they're not giving me credit for it, huh?
Yeah, it made me mad.
I don't blame you. You think the Navy taught you anything? Do you think that time in the service did something for the man
you
became?
I learned more in Wapaton, North Dakota than I did 3 years of high school. I really enjoyed that school. I've been back there once to see it. We had Navy shipmates that were teachers there, but that was a nice place. I was very glad I got there to see it. Like I said, I learned a lot in that service school.
Sounds like it. Yeah, I'm just thinking, we can go see an aircraft carrier if we want. If we want to see the USS Midway, we can go down to San Diego and visit that. You can see the second Yorktown, I believe, in Norfolk, Virginia. You go up here to the Bay Area and find the second USS Hornet. What if we want to visit the Saratoga? What would we have to do to go find your ship?
I get some frogmen to go down there.
Tell us about that. What happened to your ship?
They got a group of guys on the Saratoga. I wanted to get home, so I didn't go with them.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wished I had. And They had to get off the ship. They was going to, sink it, try to sink it.
Mm-hmm.
So they went in the background quite a ways back. I knew one guy that went out there. So they put him back on the ship, and it was still hot.
After it had been blown up by a nuclear bomb. This is the atomic bomb testing in Bikini.
Yeah, yeah.
So they put people back on the ship that was radioactive.
Yeah, I don't know why, but they went back and then, I don't know if they moved the ship. I don't think they did, but then they tried to one on top, and that's when that sunk her.
She was a tough one to sink. I mean, you guys proved that off Iwo Jima with all those kamikazes, and they proved it again then.
That was all but good.
But you've seen images from below the water where they've gone down and done some diving on the ship?
Mm-hmm. And they have to have permission. They sunk a lot of ships out there.
Oh, yeah.
Japanese battle wagon.
If you add up the American and Japanese vessels that were sunk as part of the atomic testing at Bikini Atoll, you'd come up with 16 different ships. A total of 23 nuclear devices were detonated there, either above or below the water. It took 2 of them, one of each, to knock out the 39,000-ton, 880-foot-long Saratoga. If you happen to get permission to dive there now, you only need to go down 40 feet to find the Saratoga's bridge. You can still see the dive bombers in her hangar deck, as well as unexploded bombs. If you're the adventure type, a thrill seeker, maybe you want to add that one to your bucket list. And if we were on one of those planes coming back from a mission, this would be about the spot in the program where we need to bring it back for a landing on the Saratoga's deck.
Well, I guess that's my last question. You came home. Your best buddy didn't. And he's one of 406,000 Americans who died in World War II. Most of us alive today weren't even born. We didn't live through this time, and we don't really understand how heavy a price was paid for our freedom. How should we remember today those men like Tom who paid the ultimate price? What do you think their legacy is? Or if that idea comes to mind for us, what should it mean to us? How should we think about them?
It'd be a sad story. I'm just glad I made it to 92.
You're still going, and you're one of our connections to that time. You know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm interested in your real feelings. And this show is called Hometown Heroes. And a lot of times the guys I interview, they say, hey, I don't like that name. I don't see myself as a hero.
No, I don't either. No.
Something tells me you might see Tom as a hero.
Mm-hmm. I would. I don't think very fast. I guess you realize that.
Well, sometimes maybe you're thinking too fast or you're thinking some real important things that aren't easy to say. I just want to give you the chance to honor your friend.
Mm-hmm.
It sure sounds like you keep his memory alive.
Still remember him.
And here's one more for you. Obviously, you've experienced a lot and done a lot in 92 years. Is there anything that you haven't done yet that you're looking forward to?
No, not really. I'm just, most of the time is spent in that chair over there and looking out the window.
Well, I know there's one thing I didn't say. I didn't say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us your story so we can understand a little bit what you and the guys like you went through.
Okay, well, thank you.
That is Ralph Thiessen, 92 years old and one of the last survivors of that infamous kamikaze attack on the USS Saratoga in 1945. Don't forget to pull up photos and even that short video of Ralph online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. You'll also find links there for more information on his late friend Tom Begley, who I think we all know, after listening today, would be very proud of the life his friend Ralph has lived. That's our program for today. I hope you'll join us again next time at this same time on this same station when we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.